Off the Ball Daily,
a home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
I'm so glad that I didn't hang up my gloves when everybody was asking me to, because here I am again. I still love doing what I'm doing. I'm not sick of getting up.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The Koigig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
Very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome back to the Koigig podcast. My name's Alana Canan, filling in for your host, Kathleen McNamee. But don't fear, some of the usual troops are still on hand here to break down all things women's football and WSL this week. Piemont United's Karen Duggan and Shamrock Rovers' Scarlett Hearn. How are you guys keeping?
Very well, thank you.
All good.
Good to be chatting with you.
Yeah, exactly. We're down Jamie Finn now as well. She's continuing on the ACL recovery. Kathleen's off on a well-deserved holiday, not just off-season.
Excuses. Come on.
Not just off-season for the footballers. But with that said, plenty of action still going on. Obviously, we have the WSL, which we'll touch on in a moment. But League of Ireland-wise, there's been the nominees for both the Player of the Year, Young Player of the Year and Manager of the Year this week. We might start with the big news of the day, though, I guess. But just before we came on air, not yet confirmed at the time of recording, but it looks like Ciarán Kilduff, former Athlone Town manager, is set to become the Dundalk FC men's manager. So thoughts on that, guys?
Yeah, I think it makes sense for him as a move. In the short time he was in our league, he made a massive impression. Obviously, he won a cup. He's won the league. And it's not to say that the women's league is a stepping stone, but having done it all and someone as ambitious as him and having been in such a legend in Dundalk, I think it makes sense for him. Obviously, Dundalk, there's a lot of uncertainty around it. So I don't think there's a huge amount of expectations either, which I think will suit him in his first kind of senior men's role. So obviously it's such a pity to lose someone like that out of the league, like someone with such a profile and someone who has made such a mark, like you can really tell the difference since he's come in. I just think tactically Athlone took it to a different level this year, and that's why they were able to have the consistency throughout the year that made them league champions. I think that's a big part of what he's done with the squad and the players that he's brought in. So obviously you just wish him all the best, but yeah, a huge loss from the league. But again, hopefully there'll be new managers coming in that can make the same impact that he has. And, you know, he brought a bit of excitement around the league. Having a name like that, it really does make a difference. You know, it's not quite maybe the Duff effect, but it's something similar, like, you know, and you want to see that and you want to continue it. And hopefully at some point it'll be a big name, big female name that can have that impact as well as coach.
Would you echo all the same, Scarlett?
Yeah, I think Karen hit the nail on the head there. Like, he was a great manager to have in the league. Obviously, he made a difference to that at Lone side. And as you said, it's a pity to lose him. There's no two ways about it. But obviously, Dundalk are in a bit of turmoil at the minute, which obviously means there won't be a whole pile of pressure. He's coming in as that sort of cult hero, as a former player. So I think the fans that get behind him, they have a great like support behind the Dundalk team. So I just seen in the report there that we were talking about before the show that they're switching to evening sessions and different things to switch up. So obviously they're going through a bit of financial difficulty, but I think he can really make a difference to that Dundalk side, and best of luck to him. Obviously, in the men's game, it's kind of, I'd say, a job he was looking for coming into the women's side to a sort of a stepping stone of experience. So, I'd say everyone's probably grateful that we had him in the league for the time we did, and I'm sure he'll do great things now at Dundalk and in the men's game.
100%, yeah. Dan McDonald reporting that one in the Irish Independent. I think it also sort of, in a way, maybe if you look back at the Cup final, I know there was a lot of reporting around the time, oh, you know, Kilduff steps away after the Cup final loss. But maybe, you never know, it could have been in the works for something.
He also had to do an awful lot of travel. Like, you know, some, you have to take into account people's lives outside it, you know, work and a family and stuff like that. And it's not easy to do that travel. And it's taken for granted. A lot of the girls are doing it, but a lot of the managers are doing it as well. And, you know, for very little financial reward. So I hope he's getting a bit more wherever he's going, because obviously there will still be travel involved, and hopefully it works out for him both on a football side and on a family side as well. Because you know, like it's really not easy, especially you know you're looking to transform something. If they're going evening trainings, then that's another commitment to take into consideration for him. So I think fair play, and also think it's an appreciation of our league a little bit as well that he came in, made this impact in such a short time, and that was seen as good enough now to potentially transform a really struggling side in the men's game. You know, that like I think as much as we're sad to lose him, I think it's a good testimony as well for our league.
Definitely. I was actually just going to touch on that. Like, I think he was a fantastic addition to the league. And as you say, definitely a big loss to lose him. He is up for manager of the year then alongside Shelburne's Owen Warren and Galway United's Phil Trill. Do you think he's the obvious candidate there? Obviously two fantastic managers, otherwise nominated as well.
It's a tough one. It is a tough one because I think Athlone were on that upward trajectory and he just brought that tweaks that they needed. Like, they're very hard to figure out what they are in order to do that and maybe go underappreciated, but he did that. But Galway under Phil Trill, they've transformed their whole style of play. Like, they are a team where you go down to Galway and you say they are a very, very well coached team. They're so calm on the ball. It's not about the individual. It's about like the collective effort there and the progress that they've made tactically under him. I think that should be appreciated as well. And obviously Owen Whelan coming in first year, wins a cup. I think his job was a little bit easier than Phil Trill's given the depth of talent that Shelburne have and were able to sign during the year. Not to say he didn't do a great job, but I think it's tough between Phil Trill and Kilduff, but I guess sentimentality and the fact that he's won a cup and a league in 2 years, I think he probably just tips it there.
I think as well, like Galway will go unnoticed this year. You know, they started off really strong and then towards the last maybe 6 or 7 games, they kind of filtered off a bit. But they were very much in the title race for the majority of the year. And I think Phil Trill's work does kind of go a bit unnoticed in the league. Maybe it's the Dublin bias, I'm not sure. But I think, yeah, him and Kilduff have been like really, really strong nominees for this season. I think Kilduff will edge it just because of what he has achieved with that at Athlone side and just the outstanding season they had this year in the league especially, and obviously their cup run that ended in the final. But I think what Phil Trill has done goes a bit unnoticed, and he deserves an awful amount of credit for what he's done for that Galway side. And even when you talk to a few of the girls, like, everyone loves him. He's a great character. Like, he seems like a lovely fella, and definitely a worthy nominee as well.
Yeah, they're the team that were, I would say, tactically, then we lost a good few games this year, grand point margins. Tactically, when we went down to Galway, they blew us out of the water. And I was really impressed by that.
Yeah, interesting. It's definitely reflected in the other nominations as well. So Player of the Year, Athlone Town's Maddie Gibson, Roisin Molloy, Laurie Ryan, Galway United's Julianne Russell, and then Shelburne's Maggie Pearce and Pearl Slattery. Obviously, Julianne, sort of the outstanding name there in terms of breaking into the Irish setup once again. Do you think she's maybe the front runner there?
I do, but I'm massively biased in this one. She would have gotten my vote, absolutely. Because like, to come back from obviously having a kid and playing for your local team, and to, again, she's a big part of spearheading that kind of Galway revival since they become Galway United. And I think you need someone like that and a name like that to attract players, and she's certainly part of that kind of revival there. But there is really tough competition. I mean, to be fair, Maddie Gibson has absolutely torn it up this year. And I think Maggie Pearce consistently is there or thereabouts. The other three, absolutely brilliant as well. But I think for me, they're probably the names that have stood out most consistently throughout the year. It's a really tight one. It really, really is. It's hard to call. But all very worthy nominees as well. Like, it doesn't usually be six, does there? I think it's usually three.
Yeah, it seems like
three, yeah.
Even in terms of, I know obviously we touched on briefly there the cup final, but I think it's a testament to Laurie Ryan's impact on Athlone that when she was missing, the impact that was felt there. But then on Young Player of the Year, Athlone Town's Katie Keane, who obviously recently broke into the Ireland squad, Bohemians Eva Brennan, Cork City's Niamh Cotter, Galway United's Kate Thompson, Piemont United's Ellen Dolan, and Treaty United's Katie Lawley. I think I'd know who Karen's going to go for there. Scarlett, who are you tipping?
I don't know, it's really tight. Like, there was a lot of good young performers in the league this year, and I feel like it's always the more difficult one to call. I feel like the senior player of the year, the player of the year is more sort of simple to
They generally tend to come from the top teams, whereas the young player, there's a, sorry, my alarm went off. The young player, there tends to be more of a mix, which I think is great because a lot of you are playing for the team of where you're from. And then obviously other things come into factor when you're older. But yeah, it's a harder one to call, definitely.
I think like Niamh Cotter, like Cork have had such a great year, and it's good to see like a Cork City representative. As well as that, like Eva Brennan, I thought has been really, really good as well. Like she's only what, 16 years old, and she was like one of Bohemian's star players this year. Like, so yeah, she's a really big standout player as well. And then obviously you have like Katie Keane and Ellen Dolan, who have both been in like senior Irish setup. So, just so much talent on that list. Yeah, Kate Thompson as well. I think Kate would probably be my pick, to be honest. I just think that Galway midfield is so difficult to play against. They're completely overloaded and it's impossible to get through it. And I think Kate's been such a huge part in that. Obviously really good in the air, like good ball control, and has scored a good few goals as well this season. So yeah, for me, I think it would be Kate Thompson. But a lot of worthy nominees in there. Great young players. So
yeah, I think Kate in particular, she kind of plays with a maturity beyond her years. You know, she's really, really calm on the ball. So like that's great to see. But like I say, Eva Brennan, I think like, again, she just makes such an impact, like for a small girl, like she really makes a huge impact for that team. Then obviously Ellen Dolan, she's a powerhouse. She can play in any position. Like I remember a preseason game, we played her centre back, and she's probably the best centre back I've ever seen. We play her centre forward because we need a centre forward, like, but she's probably a centre mid. You know, she's played on the wing for us. She's outstanding. She is the perfect player to have in your panel because she will do a job for you wherever you ask her, with a fantastic attitude. So obviously she gets my vote, but yeah, everyone on that list has been brilliant, and I hope some of them make the team of the year, because you know obviously the six and the senior player, you'd imagine will all get in, but I think some of them have made a real name for themselves this year, despite their young age.
I think it also speaks volumes as well that there are so many teams represented, and especially, like you say, maybe teams that didn't so much feature at the top end of the table. But definitely it speaks to a rising standard when the wider League of Ireland Women's Premier Division, that, you know, you have your likes of your Galway, your Corks and your Treaties represented in there as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's been the feature of this year. It's just the spread, and how it's the tightening of the gap from the bottom to the middle has been huge. I still think that Shells, with the amount of players that they have, that the next year, I think that they could really do a job in the league. I'm not sure, but I hope other teams have a say in that as well. But yeah, certainly that middle area is getting so tight. There was a breakaway pack this year, which, you know, was good that Galway joined that. But yeah, it's tight. Obviously, we were very much dragged into that this year as well. Hopefully we can get ourselves out of it. But yeah, with Treaty, obviously, huge investment going in down there. And you have to admire it. Like, a lot of the girls are Canadian or not names that we would have known. But that's not what it's about. It's not about us, it's about growing the league. You know, they're certainly making their impact on that, and it looks like they're going to continue to do so.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see where all of those awards find a home. For now though, we'll turn our attention to this week's top performers in the team of the week and some tactical analysis with Scarlett next. So, Scarlett, you've been given the tricky task once again to make the team of the week. I don't envy you. Who's made the cut?
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing this for about 3 weeks now, and it doesn't get any easier as you go on. It gets harder. This week, I really struggled to pick out an 11. But anyway, I'll fire away here. So in goal, I have Kinga Sechnik from West Ham. right back Ashley Lawrence, centre halves Leila Ouahabi, or sorry, left back Leila Ouahabi, two centre halves, Kudurka Buchanan and Guru Burksfand, and then two sitting midfielders, Jess Park and Vicky Losada. On the left, I have Taylor Hines from Liverpool. On the right, we have Martha Thomas, who is kind of more of a striker, but I had to kind of move things about. So she plays on the right-hand side of up front anyway, so it'll be fine. And then two centre forwards, Alessia Russo, and a bit of Irish representation in Leanne Kiernan.
I think you did a really, really good, really good job. I think you could have picked the whole Chelsea 11, obviously, and their subs that came on because they were brilliant. But yeah, Lawrence getting up from right back, Buchanan assist there. They blew everything out of the water. So whoever you pick there, but I think, yeah, fair play to Lawrence, you know. Obviously, you're coming in right back, big, big shoes to fill there in Lucy Bronze, you know, and she was fantastic, like to have a back still going at the end of the game, getting into the box. It's great. Vicky Losada, great to see again her getting in, and rightly so. I think obviously the couple of seasons previous, maybe just like an inconsistent run of games since she's come into the English league and injuries and stuff like that. But you can see when she's in that Brighton team, and now that they're playing a more possession based and a kind of like a safer game, the impact that she's having is huge. And I think maybe going under the radar because a lot of the attention is going to Nikita Paris, and she's doing really well for them. But yeah, great to see her selected there. The midfield was really hard to pick because I think Jess Park will probably go in there every week. She is a phenomenon. But again, the only other two that I think, I'm not going to say hard done by, but Nuskin and Wrighton for Chelsea as well, because Wrighton is like a 9 out of 10 every week at the moment. It's scary. And we didn't know what Chelsea would be like under the new era, but they were left in such a good position squad-wise that they're just going from strength to strength. And yeah, Taylor Hines, she's there on your left. You know, she's been a fullback before and she caught on the end of two crosses. Like that's what you want to see from your wide play. It's brilliant. Interesting one is Russo, because Arsenal had so much possession and they are still lacking that cutting edge, but it's not for lack of Russo's trying. She was by far, I think, the outstanding player in the whole game. I'd have to say, and it's brilliant to see Leanne. She was involved in the two goals, first one assist, and I think if Hines hadn't gotten the second one, that there would have been a penalty shout for her. And she's just really bright, and it's just so good to see her running at players with space. So really good job, well done. I don't have anyone who I can pick out and say nah, which is good because I love doing that.
Yeah, I'm the same, really. I think, especially you were saying there, you have to get the Irish representation in Kiernan, but I actually thought she was really, really lively and deserves her spot. And then otherwise, I guess, yeah, Brighton, maybe Paris, maybe Frank Kirby, but again, it wasn't such a sensational win like Chelsea's where you could demand that they have to be in there. But yeah, a tricky job. You're doing well.
Yeah, I mean, with the Chelsea side, I had six Chelsea players written down as potential inputs, so I had to narrow it down a little bit. Or else,
yeah, you can save it for the next time because they're not going to slow down by the looks of it.
Definitely not. Well, fantastic stuff there, Scarlett. Thanks for that. We'll be right back now with more analysis and game breakdown after this. Okay, plenty of action over the weekend to recap. The table: after six games played, sees Man City top on 16 points, followed by Chelsea on 15, Brighton on 13, Man United on 11, and I'll not keep going on because we'll be here all day. But basically, the headlines are Man City, Chelsea, and Man United all still unbeaten. We might start with Man United. Obviously, I suppose that was maybe the standout fixture of the weekend. They came up against Arsenal. We touched on there how Russo was one of their main performers, and then Mallard got the second goal for United, although Williams arguably did most of the legwork there on that one. Both sides probably a bit cautious in the first half, maybe, guys, due to the gravity of the fixture, I suppose.
Yeah, I think both sides would be disappointed. I think Man United will be disappointed because this was the perfect time to come up against Arsenal at home and potentially get that win against them. But they didn't do enough, like you said, in the first half. They didn't do enough to threaten Arsenal. They allowed Arsenal into the game. And Arsenal equally can't be too, well, they'll feel they should have gotten more out of it because they were the better team. But it's that same story that we've been saying since the start of the season. It's that cutting edge that we're seeing from Chelsea and we're seeing from City, that it was evident in patches in previous seasons, and that's why they didn't win. But now it seems to be coming quite evident. You know, I think Arsenal, given the quality that they have, they should be beating this Man United team. But yeah, they're just not, something missing. And they've changed their team around enough for it not to be that. It must be something deeper. And maybe a new manager coming in will kind of spark that. But as many shots as Arsenal had, I think something like 19 shots, only four of them were on target. You know, you've got Tullis Joyce, she was tested, but not in any meaningful way by the goal. I can't think of any really good shot. I know they hit maybe the crossbar or something, but there's no great save she had to make. I think that's Arsenal's biggest concern. And Man United's is just, I think that's their level, to be honest. And I think it was interesting to see a few boos around Skinner as well and his 100th appearance. You know, that's, it's never good, but he's not going anywhere, so they may get on with it.
Yeah, that's something I was actually going to touch on. There's a bit of a divided opinion around United so far. Obviously, they lost that perfect record this season, still unbeaten though. And like, they've already played West Ham, Everton, Liverpool, Spurs, Brighton, and now Arsenal. There is that constant chat around Mark Skinner and some of his decisions. So what would you say your assessment is on them so far?
I didn't expect them to kick on because I don't think they had a massive transfer window. You know, I think having someone like Gabs George back is good. I think that their fullback area has been strengthened because I think the previous season, obviously, you lost Russo and what's her name that went to Barcelona? Anyway, probably the best player in the league, slipped my mind now. But they were huge losses and were struggled for them and got some solid players in, so we've got a better centre mid and stuff like that, but no marquee signings where you're like, oh, that was really good. Like, that's there's no one at that level. But I don't know if that's Skinner. I don't know if that's the board and the investment. Obviously, we saw at the start of the year that they were getting kicked out of their training facilities to facilitate the men, and it's not a good look. You know, it doesn't instill a huge amount of confidence in the project, I guess. But at the same time, they're holding their own, you know, fourth place in the league, you know, drawing with Arsenal. It's not the worst place in the world, but again, what is Man United's identity in terms of style and play? I don't know if Skinner has nailed that down. I'm not like a huge fan, but I don't know what this team could do to get to the next level. I think they need more, and I think the club need to show more ambition around that. The fact that they let Russo go so easy and Mary Earps and the likes of that, they should have been like doubling down on whatever they needed to do just to make a statement of intent, and they didn't do that. And I think Man United are kind of seen as that team that might break through at some point, but they're not there yet.
For sure. And obviously, we constantly talk about Arsenal and their marketability in terms of the women's game, and United maybe need to push on in that capacity too. We saw plenty of Lionesses matchups, but there was also a Girls in Green perspective on it as well with Katie McCabe and Aoife Mannion, Scarlett.
Yeah, obviously Aoife got taken off, I think, close enough to the end. But yeah, two solid performances from the two of them. I think both teams, like both the girls, would be disappointed not to get the full 3 points. But it's always good to get like a strong Irish representation in these big games, because like United Arsenal is like, it's iconic as a fixture. Like, so it's great to get the two girls in there, and obviously like two fullbacks as well. So as Karen sort of touched on, the whole Arsenal manager at the minute, they're obviously not really firm on who's going to come in. Obviously, Renee Sledgers is doing a good job so far. I think this result is a bit disappointing for them, but obviously they bounced back originally from the international break of wins, so Arsenal definitely look to be more clinical going forward, I think. And yeah, as Karen said, like when we're doing the team of the week, it's not down to Russo, the fault that they're not sort of creating enough chances, and they just need to start being more ruthless, because they have the quality in the players. Like, they have some of the best players in the world, and they're just not really performing to the highest of their capabilities. So I think that'll be the challenge for the next manager coming in, and to just sort of rejuvenate them.
It's the first game in a long time where I didn't go, God, Kim Little is unbelievable. She's pulling strings, like, and you need that. You need that from her. Like, she's the boss in there. You need to be playing through her, and they need to find a way to make that happen, I think. Also, Cooney Cross, like, they bought her for a reason. I thought Leovaldi was very good, but I think sometimes you need someone with her little, her bite and her energy in there to spark something. But yeah, it's really hard to put your finger on what it is with Arsenal at the moment.
Moving on then, Brighton bet Leicester 1-0. We were talking about there the standout performers, maybe Nikita Paris, Frank Kirby and Vicky Lozada, but Brighton are doing well early on. Do we think they can maintain this?
I'd be surprised. I think that where they've come from to now is massive. I think, again, maybe they'd be disappointed they didn't score more, because I think Leicester had maybe one shot. But that's a good removal from where they were a couple of seasons, where they were being talked about as a kind of relegation battle, getting pulled into that. And you're glad they survived now, because their manager's doing a really great job with them. Again, like, the build-up play for that goal that they did score was excellent. You know, Carabalí and Paris was in there poaching. So I don't know if they're going to be top. I don't think they'll be title challengers. I think at some point Arsenal's quality will shine through and they'll break into that top three. But it's making things interesting. You kind of thought it would be Man United, Liverpool for that fourth spot. It's good to have another team in the mix, a team that kind of spotted what they needed to do differently and brought in the right manager and brought in the right players to play in his system. So I think a lot of teams can learn from what they've done over the last season.
You'll need to be a bit more active there, Carly. But yeah, going off that, Scarlett, ninth place last season, 19 points total. They have 13 now already this season, so there definitely is a marked improvement there.
Yeah, obviously, I think Vidasic is the main man behind this. Like, we did a tactical piece on it last week. So, they've just been really, really good this season. Like, there's an obvious change in that team, and it hasn't really been personnel. Obviously, they brought a few players in, but the core of their group is still there. And I think it's like a lot of credit has to go to the manager, obviously coming in the summer and making changes straight away. A lot of managers, it would take them a while. Like, obviously, he came from the Australian League, so he wouldn't really know the WSL that well, and to come in and make such an impact straight off the bat has been like really, really impressive. In terms of holding it, I think it's the best opportunity they probably will get, considering the difficulties United and Arsenal are having. Obviously, Liverpool are in around there as well, but I think this is really a good opportunity for them to push on and get top three or four. And I think it's really a possibility for them because they have the players and they have the experience, as we've been saying in Paris and Kirby, that they know how to score goals, they know how to create, and they're quite consistent at the back as well. So I think it's really really positive signs from them so far, and definitely I think they can push on and try finishing the top four, as I said. So,
and at the
Yeah,
top
I
of that.
think Leicester just need to be a little bit careful as well. Like, you know, they're in eighth, but you know, there's only 3 points between them. Like, they got that one big win against Everton, who are really, really struggling at the moment. But they just need to be a bit careful. They need to get more of a foothold in the game. Like, you'd expect against Brighton that they'd have a little bit more possession than 36%. Obviously, Brighton have gone on to a different level to them, but that's quite a poor for a team that I thought were going to do quite well. They've good ball playing. You know, they should back themselves a little bit more, maybe. Maybe it was just one of those days, but yeah, it was a poor showing from them, I thought.
At the top of that bracket, obviously, is Man City. They beat Crystal Palace 3-0. They are looking scarily good. And at the heart of it, like we touched on at the top, is Park. She's just looking sensational.
Yeah, they're so good to watch. They're so good. Right, 3-0. Yeah, it looks impressive. It was more impressive than that. It could have been more, just the way they kept possession. It was like girls against women. It was phenomenal. And like, Inez on the goal didn't do badly against them. You know, she kind of kept the score line down, which was an impressive feat when you think of who she was coming up against. We didn't even mention Bunny Shaw, but she would, probably could have been in with a shout for team of the week as well. So yeah, I don't know what more we can say. I think that they're firmly established as the team to challenge Chelsea this year, even though I guess it's early stages. But in terms of this, how impressive both of those teams have been, it's kind of night and day with the chasing pack.
I think you can just kind of consistently assume that Shaw should be in the team of the week.
Yeah.
Like an ever-present figure. Then looking at that as well, obviously, so there are 10 games, all competitions unbeaten, one draw, 9 wins. Then on the flip side of things, Crystal Palace must be difficult for them, having come up from the Championship. They're obviously high flyers there, have that bit of Irish interest as well in Abby Larkin and Izzy Atkinson, who both came on as subs. But it must be difficult for them trying to, as you say, break into that next tier and kind of steady the ship as well.
Yeah, it's massively, and like we spoke to Jamie about it, how hard it is to be involved in that relegation battle. But I think they've approached it quite well. I think obviously apart from that drubbing by Chelsea, which, you know, was just one of those games, they're quite realistic in their approach. Like they are playing the five at the back. They're not trying to play the expansive football or the kind of game that they played in WSL2, because they know that the margins are so fine and it's so difficult to try and stay up when you've just come up from the second tier. So, you know, they're not in the worst position. You know, 4 points seems like quite little, but you know, West Ham and Everton they're really, really struggling as well. I think Villa, based on the performance that we saw yesterday, they should be doing better than they are. You know, they just are not getting the results, and it's a little bit concerning for them, but I think they have the quality to dig themselves out of it. Whereas West Ham can't buy a bit of luck at the moment, and Everton are just struggling so much for players. So Crystal Palace could dig in if they continue to be that kind of sticky team at 2-0. You know, they hit the post, you know, that goes in, it might change the complex of the game. I don't think they would have deserved that now at the game, but you know, they had a bit of threat on the attack. We've seen them starting to get a couple of goals, and maybe they'll grow in confidence. They need to just park a Man City game. The games like Chelsea and Man City, you write them off, you use them as experience to move on to the games where you're targeting those teams around you. So of the teams that have come up in recent years, apart from Liverpool, who have done brilliant, they're kind of the team I'm against the odds, I think, could potentially sneak out of it. Hopefully. I think they're doing quite well.
I think they're going quite well. Like, I'm just even looking at the fixtures they've had here. Like, they've, what is it, opening 7 games or so, they've played City, Liverpool, Brighton, Chelsea and Tottenham, and then they've beaten Leicester as their only win. But like, they're not easy fixtures at all. Got a draw against Liverpool as well. Like, we spoke, as you mentioned, to Jamie, and every win is like that crucial. Like, one win has seen them bump up like 4 spots in the table, and it can change the complete like complexion of how your season's going and how that part of your season's going. So obviously one win from 6 or 7 games isn't great on paper, but then when you look at the teams below them, like West Ham and Everton, you said like a win can be so important in this league, and it could games like that could keep them up. And as you said, like playing Man City, it's sort of just a no-brainer that City are going to take the reins on it. But I think Crystal Palace are adapting really well to the league, and I think I don't think there'll be an issue with them staying up. Obviously, it'll be a bit of a struggle, but I think with the other teams in the league that are sort of cemented down the bottom, I think Crystal.
Yeah, that's interesting what you're saying about the fixtures. To be fair, because that's a baptism of fire, but it gets you up to that level straight away. So now that they've experienced that, they're settled in the league, they know what to expect, and they can kind of tailor their tactics around that. I think that's actually, some people would look at it and, you know, it could dent their confidence, but I think that's actually going to help them in the long run here, to get up to speed and kind of to bed in their identity in terms of defensive work and what they need to do to compete at this level pretty early on. And that will carry them through, hopefully.
Yeah, one of those teams also looking to improve, like you mentioned, West Ham. They lost out 2-1 to Spurs, obviously only in the dying seconds as well. So they will have been frustrated not to have got the draw at least out of that one.
Yeah, and when things are going wrong, they're really going wrong. I mean, the own goal was just a calamity. You know, your keeper's coming out, you're facing your own goal. I think the keeper has to take man and ball there, you know, and just completely demand that, because it's too risky facing your own goal. And also the clearance, if you are, it to be hooked out to the side. You don't go for height. I think it was just one of those moments where there was complete panic set in, and it's just not what West Ham needed at this point. They know against Spurs, they definitely felt like they could have gotten something as well, because Spurs, as enjoyable as I find them to watch because they're good in attack, they're so vulnerable. You know, they concede more than anyone. They've conceded more set pieces from anyone, which West Ham took advantage of. So they're a team that are kind of there for the taking as well. And that's what West Ham really, really needed this week. But again, they were just architects of their own downfall at the end.
Yeah, Ella Morris as well, worth a shout out. First WSL start, and she was really, I think, lively and looking to go forward as well, working or overlapping with England there. Spurs have also conceded, like you touched on there, Karen, more than any other team in the league on set pieces. They've conceded more than any team in the league, period. They obviously... it's something they need to work on. I was going to say, what do they need to work on there? But it's quite evident.
Yeah, I don't know what Scarlett thinks about it. It's like, it's a hard thing to work on defending set pieces, because it's up to the opposition team about what they do against you in set pieces. Some of it comes down to just having people who are good in the air, having brave people. But I don't know, Scarlett, what do you think?
I don't know, like, set pieces are really overlooked. I said it a few weeks ago. And
yeah,
like,
you did, to be fair.
It's so, like, all teams, it's all second phases as well. Ball comes out, players ball watching, and just player goes in behind them. I know it's not the case here, but I think set pieces are such a dangerous set for any team. And I don't even think it's how you work on them defensively. I think it's all about how other teams set up, as Karen said. So, like, you can clearly see teams that are setting up properly for set pieces, and that are really doing their homework and trying to come up with different ways to sort of try, I don't know, like going short, trying to clip it in back post, back across, whatever it is. Like, and teams are really being like expressive. That I think Chelsea are really good at it. I think Chelsea have took advantage of it, as of Man City. I think the majority of their goals this year have come from crosses. I think a few from set pieces as well. But as Karen said, yeah, it's just so difficult to sort of defend against. Like, do you go zonal? Do you go man? Like, is it up to bravery? Is it up to position? And there's a lot of aspects to it, but I think the majority of it is just staying switched on, and just, like, if you're going for it, you have to go 100% in. You can't half-ass it. And I think we talked about goalkeepers, like, a lot on this podcast, and again, just a bit of miscommunication maybe at the back. I don't know what it is, but yeah, I think in those dying embers of the game, you just have to be solid. You know, you can't be letting, like, you can't be having set pieces like that go in. So
definitely. And then in terms of that, obviously you're saying you need to always be switched on, but in a training setting, then how do you improve on that week on week?
I think it's a matter of repetition and just becoming comfortable and not doing it passively. I think over the years, it's something maybe we've all been guilty of. We work on attacking set pieces and the defenders in it are a bit like, oh, let it happen, so that you get confidence in your attacking set piece. But that shouldn't be the case. You should be defending them 100%. And it's something maybe we can bring back to our clubs, having observed it now. But yeah, it's such an important part. And it is, it's something you have to practice. You have to get, like, the first time it happens and you get hit, you get a shock. But if it happens and you get used to it, then you're not afraid of it in a match. And I know it might sound weak or whatever to say you're afraid, but it can be intimidating when you're going for balls and there's heads getting clashed. You know, it's not something that comes natural to a lot of people. So if it doesn't come naturally to you, something you need to work on.
For sure. And then elsewhere, Liverpool 2-1 over Aston Villa. Robert Depay didn't hold back post-match. He said his side were terrible in the first half and that they didn't show up. Obviously, they were using a new formation in 3-5-2 over the 4-3-3, which they previously used. But it just didn't seem to click for them. They obviously made the changes at halftime, and having replaced Carl Ward, he's got 2 points from 6 games yet to get a win. Not an ideal start for Aston Villa so far.
No, and it makes you kind of wonder, did Carl Ward know something we didn't? I still kind of, I'm looking at the team and looking at some of the moves that they do and think, God, they have great quality in their team. So, yeah, you'd wonder what it is. Obviously, I actually think it's a good thing the manager whipped people and made substitutions at halftime. Sometimes that's what's needed. They left themselves too exposed against Liverpool. Like, Liverpool's game is that counter attack. They're so dangerous on it. They have pace, and they fell into that trap because they did have a good bit of possession. They did kind of fancy themselves to go at Liverpool, but you need to kind of take care of where they've been weak. And when you are at that end of the table, that's the first thing that you need to concentrate on. And I think that they're still being like, oh, we've got the quality to play, which they do, but they're not minding the house enough. That's not to take away from Liverpool, who I think worked on that. And it's very evident with the players that they get forward and the pace at which they move. I think that that's a key feature of their game. And it's so brilliant to have someone like Leanne Kiernan's pace. She was popping up on the right. She was up on the left. She was in the centre for the second goal. And hopefully she just gets a good run of fitness there, because I think, again, she didn't feature as much as we maybe would have liked to see in the two games against Georgia. But I still think she could have a massive role against Wales, because it could be a case that we don't have that much possession and we do need to just do what we did against France at times and just go at them in terms of press, like absolute pace and press, and try and get in behind. So hopefully, anyway, she stays fit for the next month and gets a good run of games with Liverpool.
Yeah, definitely. It'd be fantastic to see. We might push on to Chelsea, just looking at the clock here. Chelsea 5-0 Everton. As you said at the top, you could really pick out anybody in the Chelsea squad that starred. But on the other side of things, Scarlett, a tough day for Courtney Brosnan.
Yeah, and like we don't really usually say that, but there wasn't much she could do for any of the goals, to be honest. And she still made a good few saves to keep the score down as much as she could. But yeah, a really struggling Everton side, and even Heather Payne, like you can see, like the whole team is struggling. It's obviously not great for her, but yeah, it's hard to put your finger on it. They're just it's just silly mistakes as well. You know, there's times where it's just defensive errors that are sort of eating it, like they're feeding into the palms of Chelsea, and you can't do that against a team like Chelsea, because they're ruthless and they will just punish you at every opportunity. So as we said earlier, like Everton's one of those teams that they're the reason for their own downfall. So yeah, it's really difficult times for Everton, and I hope for the sake of the Irish girls, obviously, that they can get out of it. But I think they need that first win to really try push them on. And I think that will start with getting their defensive structure in line. And also, I'm not sure where they're going to get goals from, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think they really struggle with that.
Yeah, I think you nailed it there. Like, we've spoken in previous weeks about them being their own downfall. They're trying to overplay at the back, and they currently don't have the players to do that, with injuries or whatever. Or even without injuries, I don't think they have the quality to do that. So I do think, as great as you think it is to develop these kind of game plans and grow a team, you have to have that solidity first. And Everton are trying to jump a step ahead in terms of becoming that ball playing team without having that solidity, and they're finding themselves in a pretty precarious position because of that now. And their squad depth just isn't there. They do not have the squad depth to like develop a game plan. So sometimes it means just going back to basics, and I think we've said it before, but yeah, it's as good as Chelsea, where the things are looking a little bit dire for Everton.
Have to wait and see what happens there on the Chelsea side of things, though. Sonia Van Foster could obviously rest some of her players, which is a scary thought considering that they did do that and they still came out with such a result. I thought Beaver Jones in particular was impressive, and I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, she's a proper centre forward, isn't she?
Yeah, post-match as well, though, like Sonia Van Foster talked about how she wants to start every single game, and that she kind of has to tell her that you need to be patient, which is probably a good sign as well. But it must be difficult to keep that many players and that quality of players all happy as well.
Yeah, and that's something that Emma Hayes managed really, really well. And it's a skill. That's a management skill. It's not easy. You see it in our league. Some players are not happy with playing and they'll just leave. Whereas Chelsea have managed to somehow retain them and add to the squad, and they seem to all play well together. So for Van Basten's sake, hopefully she can continue with that. Obviously, Beaver Jones as well came off the international break. She was underutilized there, and you could kind of tell she had the bit between her teeth, and her goal was really well. Just the way she got across the centre forward for the first goal was really, really good. Yeah, she's just good player. Like, you know, they're just littered with talent. And I think Newskin is another one, like Beaver Jones. She's so solid and just does her job so well. And she's maybe not one of the big name players, but I think she's fantastic as well in the middle.
Elsewhere then, just to mention a few of the Irish girls, Celtic 4-0 over Motherwell, Saoirse Noonan on the score sheet there. Ella Molloy started for Sheffield in their 1-0 loss to London City. Lionesses in the Championship, and good news for Irish fans, Rucha Littlejohn was back on the bench there. She's also up for, Ella Molloy is also up for Championship Goal of the Month in October. And then finally, Glasgow City, Emily Whelan is up for October Player of the Month. 6 goals. She's been firing on the assist front too. Getting used to the player of the match status as well. Pushing maybe into the conversation for another Ireland call-up.
Yeah, I don't see why not. She's become very consistent, and I think, like, young enough to bring into the squad and get a lot of value of having her amongst the squad. I would have her in around it. It's good. Claire Walsh got 90 minutes as well. She's kind of someone who we haven't seen the international set off for a while, but she's a good quality player as well, and probably should be. It's just that we're stacked for centre backs at the moment, which is obviously a great complaint to have. But yeah, Emily Whelan for me, definitely put a hand up, certainly in the extended squad if we need that. I think it'd be good to get her back in around the setup.
Brilliant. Well, I think that's all from us for now. My thanks to Karen and Scarlett. I've been Alana Canan, and this has been the Koi Gig Podcast. The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner to the Republic of Ireland Women's National Team. If you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can tweet us at the Koi Gig Pod or email the Koi Gig Pod at offtheball.com. We'll see you next week.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland Women's National Team.